you don't want a story that's an hour and a half long. In right now, you want a story that's 7 months long.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. And therefore, your requirement for plot and your tolerance for authenticity and distraction is just, it's just not what you might think it would be traditionally. And Phillips constantly found a way to put 6 years worth of episodes of a Netflix show into one, like, one story.
Welcome back to the Broadway Ginger Podcast, where we have no rules, just musicals. I am your host, Sally Fuller, aka the Broadway Ginger, and today is my 40th episode, y'all. I'm so excited. For some reason, that sounds like a lot to me, and so I'm really excited to have you along to celebrate this milestone with me. So now that a lot of theaters are getting back into the swing of producing shows, and we're going back to the theater, we are kicking off a new mini-series called Back to the Theater. We'll have some interviews with theater professionals of all kinds as they return back and they get into the swing of things. So in today's episode, I've got a special interview with Philip DePoy and Christian Bush, the writers of a brand new musical that's having its world premiere at the Alliance Theater next month called Darlin' Corey. So I sat down to chat with them a couple weeks ago, at which point they were about a week from starting rehearsals with the cast and the whole company. And of course, by then, they had been working on the show with director Susan V. Booth and the Alliance's creative team for almost 2 years. So this show is described as an Appalachian myth inspired by a folk song of the same name. So here's the official description of the show. Set against the backdrop of 1920s Appalachia, Darlin' Corey is a haunting new musical by playwright and novelist Philip DePoy and Sugarland's Grammy Award-winning frontman Christian Bush. In a tiny mountain town with no road in and no road out, a community carries secrets of all sizes. But when a young woman with ambition and intelligence collides with a pastor deeply committed to preserving the status quo, cracks begin to appear in the town's well-constructed facade. And when a stranger appears with a mysterious backstory and the best moonshine anyone's ever tasted, some of these secrets threaten to spill. With an original folk country score, this modern-day myth inspired by local lore promises to leave audiences on the edge of their seats. Now, doesn't that sound exciting, y'all? So this interview is one of those rare occasions where I had two people recording an episode with me instead of one. And as you'll hear, I basically like third wheeled as Philip and Christian talked all about their experience writing together. So it was a really fun conversation and I'm excited for you to hear it. And though you can't see them, I think it'll be pretty clear from their voices which one is the country singer. So enjoy my chat with Philip DePoy and Christian Bush.
Well, I'm so excited to get to chat with y'all today. It's so cool to talk to two people at the same time. This is going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome until Christian and I start talking at the same time, which is, I'm pretty sure, going to happen a lot. And then so your entire podcast will just be a garble of voices, like a Robert Altman movie or something.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll try to we'll see what we can do about that. So how has prep for Darlin' Corey been going?
It pandemically been going fantastic. I mean, it's just unlike doing this. I mean, I'm kind of the newbie in the room, but it's unlike doing this the last time I've done it, where you actually got to sit with people and get into a collaborative space where things sort of rapidly spin. Right now, it's all happening in my mind like a some sort of giant imaginative dream.
I would say that's a great description, especially since we actually started this like 2 years ago, in essence. Christian and I met in Susan's office before anyone had ever heard of COVID. We both got really, or I was really excited. Christian may not have been as excited as I was, but we both got really excited about the project and had great talks. And then suddenly, wham, we just didn't see each other for a year, except on, Zoom meetings. And that was my first experience trying to put something like this together, not in person. And it was very disconcerting for a while.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that would be very different, especially like with how interpersonal and collaborative musical theater is. I imagine that this was very jarring.
It absolutely was. And you're right. I mean, what would happen ordinarily in the room is Christian and I would be, and Susan and Amanda and the other people involved would be back and forth all the time, every other sentence and stuff. And Zoom just doesn't really allow for that same kind of interpersonal collaboration. It's more, I think Christian said it perfectly. It was a little dreamlike.
That's so crazy. What a time to be creating.
Exactly.
I tell you what was real interesting about this whole thing is circumstantially, my process to create is one in which I have to actually do it. I can't just hit it in my brain. So I do a very spiral process for me. Like, let's say like I draw a line on a piece of paper and that's the song, right? And then I may spiral it on the outside. I may hit it twice and then come back inside like it's getting closer and closer to the center. And I'll keep re-singing the song or re-recording it and re-recording it. And then if you looked at the history of all of this stuff, you're going to see like the songs that have 9 versions of them. And then it's very much, it makes sense if you're writing on paper, like a lot of what Philip scripts, like he may be on draft 6, but I'm on like song version 20, right? but it's similar, but in this case, very early on, we had a different story in mind, but the same universe. And the songs that were written then, some of them became tent poles and I stopped changing them and they just sat there. And because we're doing nothing and we're alone, it's the one thing you can go back and listen to and reimagine the world around. So Philip did this weird thing where he made a song that was meant for something else. Like he kept reinventing it by what he put around it.
Wow.
So, it was super cool, like 2 or 3 of these creations that we had. Like he said something and I would be like, oh, okay, well, I know what that song's going to sound like. And I was right and wrong and right.
Wow. So like that's the most multifaceted use of all of your drafts that you've ever had.
I mean, it's really true that also I would write something in the privacy of my own, cramped little office, send it to Christian, and he would go, wait a second, I don't think that's dialogue, I think that's a song lyric. So he would take that, turn it like magically into a song lyric, so it obviated maybe a third of the scene. And it made it better, so that the scene builds up to the song, the song reveals the content of what had been the scene, and it moves it along so much better, moves it along and so much more interestingly. And Christian, when you say that happened at least 5-6 times.
Yeah. I mean, part of this is as a songwriter, I live in the commercial space. That's kind of my job, is to write things that get stuck in your ear. And hopefully, you don't hate me for it. Some people do. But because that's my vocation, or that's my vocabulary, I'm using that vocabulary in a totally different way. And I sometimes forget that that's what I'm doing, because I just get excited because I'm just trying to satisfy the request. Because when you write so much from a commercial standpoint, you're always putting yourself into it. You're just not telling anyone, because that's how you keep your heart from breaking, right? You just always do the thing that is self-satisfying within the context of what you're allowed to do for your job, right?
Wow.
And so it's always great for me, always. But when Philip would be like, oh, this is kind of what the scene is, I was like, ooh, I could stick a song over here. I could stick a song over there. Like, it just depends on what you want. And I don't take it personally because it's all personal. Like, like, that's what's so fun about this for me is that they always tell you, I mean, I'm not a golfer, but I hear this all the time, like, golf with people better than you. Right? But it's the way that I build bands. I make myself the weakest link. And that means if I'm feeling all right, we're awesome. So it's been really a thrill to kind of have Philip just kind of like, oh, and it goes here, and then it goes here, and then it goes here. And he's always holding all that stuff in his head. So all I really have to do is satisfy the requests.
Yeah.
And then see which one they like, because I like them all.
I mean, I think that's a great perspective, because really, more than anything I've ever worked on in my 733 years in show business, it's the most collaborative piece of work I've ever done. You know, Susan Booth's ideas are as much a part of the script as mine and Christian's are. Christian came up with some of the best things in the script. And what he says is right. You take this piece here, you take this piece here, and it's amazing that when you put it all together, it sounds like a coherent story and a coherent product. I hate to use that word, but there's got to be a better word for it than that. But anyway, the whole thing coheres beautifully, and it kind of shouldn't, because of a year and a half on Zoom going, hey, what about taking this paragraph out and putting this dulcimer there? And I'm kind of amazed at how we've come up with something so beautiful. And there aren't, I mean, so far, there hasn't been very much ego involved. It's everybody going, yeah, that's the right idea. Yeah, that's the right thing.
Wow.
And that's been so great. Don't you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety when you make stuff that you're getting it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it just permeates me all the time. It's not that I want to get it right. I just want to not get it wrong. Yeah. When you have such wonderful kind of collaborators, everybody's best sort of cut at that is to the point now where I'm looking at it, and I've been working the last two or three days to like make sure my stuff's in a row before we launch into inviting others into the room. And during that process, I was like, wait a minute, I'm still working on this. Why am I working on this? Oh, it's because it's a double album. It's like 20-something songs. It's like – and I didn't realize how much stuff is in here. I thought it was literally – I mean, my normal is like, oh, I'll sit down and spend a couple hours. I'll get it right. And then like two – it's not – I'm completely off base because I don't understand the amount – of stuff that's sitting in front of us. Wow. I just somehow convinced myself that it's no different than anything else I'm doing. I'm so wrong.
The thing is, I would say you could probably categorize this as a new kind of musical too, because of what Christian just said, and because the book isn't as much a typical musical book as it is a script. That has been infused with a musical identity. It's a much more complex script and much more complex songs than I think you would get in a typical, like certainly than in a typical Broadway musical. Christian likes to cite Hades Town, and I do too, because it's a brilliant piece of
love
work. I think you have to love it. And that was a good thing for us to think about early on that we were creating an almost mythic oeuvre, a mythic environment in which the stuff, the songs and the action could happen.
Wow. So is it almost like, I mean, it sounds like this is the ultimate example of the songs are advancing the plot, like hearing your description of saying, oh, wait, that dialogue should be a song. Let me make that into that. Like, that sounds so pure and it sounds so, so plot driven.
My humble response is that Philip is the king of driving the plot, right? That's what he does. I've only known him for a very short time, and I would trust him with that 1,000%. Because his compass knows. Your compass knows which way to go with that kind of stuff. And it's the kind of stuff that, because we are alive at this time and culture, that we all have vocabulary about. We don't watch one or two episodes of something. We want like four seasons of a show, like right now. And I'm a little pissed that there's not a fifth. There, couldn't they have done better in season three? You know, it's like you don't want a story that's an hour and a half long. In right now, you want a story that's 7 months long.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And therefore your requirement for plot and your tolerance for authenticity and distraction is just, it's just not what you might think it would be traditionally. And Phillip's constantly found a way to put 6 years worth of episodes of a Netflix show into one story. And it's dense. It's also like, it's like a really good dessert. You know what I mean? Like it kind of smacks you around a little bit. You will never freaking forget it. And there's salt on top.
It's the salt really actually that does it, I think, Christian. I think you're right about that. Look, the thing is, Christian alluded to this earlier, but when we first started this, when he decided that this was the idea he wanted to work on, it was a nice little story about female literacy in Depression-era Appalachia. It was based on a true or quasi-true story of the folk song Darling Corey. And it progressed over the 2 years that we talked about it to something much more epic. It's a Greek mythology. It's Appalachian folklore. It's Christian's life. It has a lot to do with my experiences. And it's really turned into something quite huge, quite remarkable. The things that it's trying to say, and that we hope it says, are some pretty big issues: dismantling the patriarchy, gender identity. A lot of very contemporary notions are in this little Depression era town in Appalachia. And I'm not quite sure how we did it, except that we did it by increments. It's what Christian said, you know, the 15th version of the song suddenly clicked and here we are with that right moment. I would say the same thing happened. For example, Christian came up with, I think, the best idea in the play to have, I think, were there originally three Crow sisters?
Yeah.
Anyway, these characters called the Crows, who were sort of marginal, witchy-like women. That sort of sat on the edge of the story. And then more and more, they became very central to the story. And Christian wrote like at least three songs just for them that are the spookiest songs in the show. I mean, don't you think that some of the Crow songs are some of the scariest songs in the...
Yeah, I feel like every time I wrote a song for the Crows, I was trying to be Prince.
Really?
Like, because he's that good. I guess was, but in my mind, Prince is still, his spirit is still alive somewhere.
Yes. And,
but I think that's it. I think that, I have a long history of writing songs for women. Right. And yeah. I also, love writing songs where everybody's kind of different, you know, like different people excite me. Like I know me, I'm in everything. I'm kind of bored with me, but I'm really into whatever it is that you got going. So, there's a lot of joy for me in listening to the songs with the Crows.
Well, that sounds very, very cool. Like all of that. I mean, it just sounds like there is so much that has been in y'all's process, and it almost sounds like because of COVID, it's been like stretched out because you haven't been at that fast pace in the same room together. And I wonder if that kind of stretching out has brought something new out of this show that might not have happened otherwise.
I think probably so. I would have to say, there was more thinking time for me anyway. I had a lot more time to just ponder all by myself than you would if you're in the, you know, you're in the rehearsal hall. We're right across the table from each other. Things are happening a lot faster and a lot more immediately. Having that much thinking time, I think, actually did something unusual to this entire process. Don't you, Christian?
Yeah, I would agree with you completely that there was a time before the internet that I completely recall, you know, and I could walk around and sing things to myself over and over again. I would, I even remember like writing long letters, and that's what this feels like. It feels like slow without being methodical, you know, like, let me just say this a different way. Creating is a weird thing for creators because at some level you are completely aware that you're channeling, like you're being honest with yourself somewhere that you're not doing it, but you're doing it. And that sounds a little spooky because some people are like, oh, blah, blah, blah. It's like, shut up. It is spooky. It's a spooky feeling because when you're younger, you own it as if those are your thoughts. And then as you get older, you start to question if that's true or not. And then at a certain point, you're on the edge of, am I crazy? Should I start drinking? Like you're not quite sure how to navigate it, right? And I have just crested into that, am I crazy? Or how many times am I going to let this go by where I convince myself that it's still me doing it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm at that point in my life. And with this dramatic putting the brakes on with COVID in this particular one, it has given me enough perspective to understand not only am I doing my best to apply craft to this inspiration, but it's slow enough that I can tell which part is like completely channeled and which part is me trying to craft that. So as a result of that speed, it has given me the chance to collaborate not just with Philip or with maybe Susan or Amanda, but also with whatever is stirring this pot from above. Like I get it, and I can collaborate with it. I can ask things to show up. I can give permission to the world to be like, here's a weird thing and I'm not weird enough to handle it. Can you help me with it? You know, it's like almost, it's slow enough to invoke the prayer of a creator.
I would have to say I could not agree with that more. I absolutely believe that I don't do any of this, actually. Something else does, and I have no idea what that something else is. I just know that if I can get out of the way, extent to which I can get myself, my ego out of the way and let whatever that is come through is the extent to which it's good. And if it's not good, it's because I got in the way. And if it is good, it's because I had sense enough to let that thing happen. And having as much time as we've had to do this has just allowed that a thing, whatever it is, to do more and better work. Because we're on draft. I think the draft I just sent in this morning is called hilariously 6E. But all that means is I think this is probably around the 20th draft of the play since we first started.
Wow.
And each one's a little better. Some of them are a lot better. And each one is a little tiny bit better.
Yeah. Here's the creepiest thing of all. You ready? There are three songs I wrote once in 3 minutes each.
Whoa. Yeah.
And that's like, because that just came to you.
It just showed up, and I sent them to Philip, and I'm like, they're pretty much tagged. If you went through our email, which maybe somebody should do that one day, because now you can track communication. It might be a fun story to tell. Predominantly, you can identify these songs because it says in the email, I don't know what this is, but
actually, one of my favorite songs in the show, it's a song called Misty Mountain. That's what he did. He said, I don't know what this is. I'm not even sure it belongs in this show. I just like it. And he sent it to me, and I went, that's my favorite song. It still might be my favorite song in the show. And now we use it a couple of times. It's, you know, I put it in one place that didn't work, and then Susan had a great idea for it. And now, I mean, it's – I love it, and I actually listen to it every once in a while just when I want to calm down.
That is so amazing, and it just sounds like – there's like a pure place that your work has been coming from in this project. And it sounds like it's like been closed off to the noise that can kind of overthink or downplay what's inside you. And that sounds amazing.
I agree with you. You're right on it.
You are.
So you've got this musical, it's premiering in September. So this sounds like it's been an amazing process. Do y'all have any hopes to do another musical at some point, or is that way too far in the future right now?
It's way too far in the future, pal. We go into rehearsal next week, and Christian and I both know that once we get in rehearsal, stuff will change there too. So you can't afford really to be, especially in the hall. Speaking personally, I won't be able to focus on anything but what's happening right that moment in rehearsal, because something will change or something is great and we'll want to exaggerate that, or a million things will happen. And I can't think about anything. I mean, Christian's working on other music. He has 17 bands that he plays in. You know, I have a new book coming out in October that I actually have to do some final edits for. But all that goes sort of on the periphery for me once we get in the hall next Tuesday. Is that right? Tuesday?
Yeah. D-Day.
Yikes.
I think we're going to have to be cautious a little bit more. In rehearsal, I think I saw that the singers have to be in masks or in shields. Because my only thought was, how am I going to be able to make sure I hear whether they're singing it correctly?
Right. But the same is true for the dialogue, obviously. Yeah. You know, you want to be sure that everything's crisp, and they're having to work with a certain kind of language. It's a from the language and the music and the language and the dialogue, it's a rarefied sort of almost poetic version of speech patterns that Christian and I have heard for a very long time. He in Tennessee and me in North Georgia.
Oh.
And if that's not captured correctly, it just sounds stupid. It won't sound right.
Well, it sounds so exciting, and I'm really stoked for y'all to get in the rehearsal room. Sounds like it might be look a little different than usual, and I guess you'll see what it's like next week.
Yeah, and I love that the world right now is different, so why wouldn't that be true?
Yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be reflected in the rehearsal hall? I love that. That's brilliant. Of course. Our little world will reflect the larger world. And that's what we hope, of course, for the show, that its little microcosm reflects the larger world.
Mm. I love it. I'm sure the rehearsal process will have a lot more collaboration and fine tuning and all that stuff. So I'm excited for y'all to get to keep working on that. It sounds like this has been a really special experience for you. And I'm just so thrilled that it's happening in Atlanta.
Me too.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course.
Great talking with you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. I have to note here that Christian Bush was actually my second country singer to interview for a musical theater context. The other one actually was Taylor Hicks. But also, Christian is the very first Grammy Award winner I've had on my show. So at this point, I'm going for my interview EGOT. And I've already had an Emmy winner, now a Grammy winner. So I'm sure we can expect Oscar and Tony winners on the show soon. So anyway, back to Darlin Corey. You can hear a few songs from the new musical now streaming on Spotify. And of course, we'll link to those in the show notes on thebroadwayginger.com. And if you're in the Atlanta area, check out Darlin Corey at the Alliance Theater, September 8th through October 3rd. And I've got to say, one of my favorite local actors, Jeremy Aggers, is in it, and I would see him in anything. So that's a big reason to see it as well. Be sure to subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/thebwayginger for some bonus content, and connect with me on social media at thebwayginger, and we'll see you next time for more theater and more jazz hands.